Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Soita Daf Gimel. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formatted introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins four lines from the top of Daf Gimel. On the side of the Gemara, where we have a nosei, a topic heading, we've written tiurim, descriptions, hakshurim, that are related to la'odom ho'iver avera. We've used a dashed underline to highlight the expression Adam Ovir Avera, so you can see the two references in the Gemara to this topic, namely a person who sins. Now the Gemara. Tanya, Hoyo Rabbi Meir Oimer, Adam Ovir Avera B'Seser, a person who commits a sin in private, the way of many is the commission of sins in private, thinking that, well, no one's going to see them. And the question always remains in one's mind is, are these people thinking that the Almighty doesn't see it either? Well, whatever the case, HaKadosh Baruch Hu machriz alav begoli, the Almighty will publicize the offense. Literally, he will announce it in public or in an exposed fashion. He will expose the sinner. The Rashi points out, Adam Oiver Avera Kagon Isha Prutza, Oiveres Beseser. The relevance of this is, of course, relevant to the Isha Sota, a married woman who goes off with another man into seclusion. That itself, by the way, is problematic. The question is what actually transpired in seclusion, if an actual act of intimacy took place. No matter, it will become publicized. The Rashi goes on to say, "Hakadosh Baruch Hu machriz alav begolui." That is, "Hakadosh Baruch Hu machriz begolui." The Almighty will announce it in public. Shenoisein b'leiv b'ayla, he places in the heart of her husband lekanoisla to warn her, to become angry with her. V'hadover misparsim begolui, and this will become public knowledge. So that a person who thinks that he's going to get away with it by going into seclusion beyond the watchful eye of others had better be aware of this drasha, that it will become known. Now, where do we see this in the verses? Shenemar, our Gemara goes on. It says in the pasuk, the avar olav ruach kino, regarding the husband of a woman who is suspected of immorality. The verse refers to a spirit of kina, of suspicion, of wrath will overcome him. Now, the word v'avar is explained, v'ein aveira elo loshon hachraza. The word v'avar represents an expression of announcement, and that's the relevance to our current explanation, that the Almighty will publicize. Shenemar vayetzav Moshe ve'aviru koil b'machane. In another pasuk, we see the word vayaviru with the same Hebrew root, avar, as representing an announcement. The pasuk quoted from Shmos Perek Lamed Vav is a pasuk related to Moshe Rabbeinu making an announcement concerning the construction of the Mishkan. Reish Lakish Amar, Ein Adam Oivra Avera, Elim Kein Nichnas Boi Ruach Shtus. A person does not commit a sin unless a spirit of foolishness entered him first. Shenemar, Ish Ish Ki Siste Ishto. The Pasuk, again, a reference to the Sota woman. It says a man whose wife goes astray, and the word chosen by the Torah is sisteh. That's to go off the path, to go astray. The Torah itself has no vowels or punctuation, so when you look at that word sisteh, which literally is to do with going off the path, the same root letter-wise appears as that of foolishness, of shoiteh. Tishte Ksiv. You can see where the drosha, as we said, involves the same root letters as shtus, as becoming foolish. So that a person, though he may be well educated, well informed of the omnipotence and omnipresence of the Almighty, and though with that awareness one would imagine a person could not possibly sin, nevertheless people do sin, and that, as is explained by Reish Lakish, is a result of the ruach shtus, the spirit of foolishness that enters the person before he sins. Tana debe Rabbi Yishmael, mitnei ma hemino Torah eid echad b'soita. Why is it that the Torah, in the case of Sota, in the case of this topic, which, by the way, we discussed extensively in our shir on Daf Beis, in our previous shir, why is it that the Torah grants believability to a singular witness in the case of the Sota, which is contrary to standard legal and testimony practice, whereby two witnesses are needed, a minimum of two witnesses are needed to establish facts? When it comes to the Sota, a married woman, of course, whose husband had warned her not to be in seclusion with so-and-so, and then went into seclusion, and one witness comes and tells us that that he saw the act itself, the actual act of sexual intercourse taking place, which renders her forbidden to her husband, and as we said, he is believed. Shiraglayim ladovar. Sharaglayim dover means there is already a basis for suspicion. Before we come to believe the singular witness, there's already grounds for suspicion. Sharei kino lo venistera. The husband had warned her. She went into seclusion. And regarding these elements, we have testimony that will substantiate that. V'eid echod mi'ido shitmeon. Then one witness comes and says there was an actual act of intimacy that took place. So we believe him. And as we've learned before, based on the pasuk itself, we are able to believe him. Omar le Rav Papa l'Abaye. V'ha ki ksiva kinoi. When you look at the psukim and you see a reference to the husband warning her, Basar stira v'tuma hu d'ksiva, it follows, it comes after the stira, the seclusion, and the act of intimacy. So we see that the one witness is believed even without what you said was the grounds for suspicion, i.e. even without the kinui, even without the husband warning her. Now the basis of this question is an awareness of the psukim. So let us look together on the psukim that we've included on the side of the Gemara, and Rashi quotes them in part. The psukim we're referring to is in Bamidbar, Perek Hei, Pasuk Yud Gimel. So together we read it. V'shochav ish oisa shichva zera, v'ne'ela mi'enei isha, v'nistera, v'hinitma. And here are the key words. The woman went into seclusion and she became defiled. The aid ain ba, and from that phrase, v'ein ain ba means, and we believe a singular witness. V'hi lo nitpasuk, provided that there was no rape involved. Now, in reading this pasuk, you did not notice any reference to kinui. So we say that the believability of the singular witness is not based on the established suspicious grounds that the Tanaic source just made reference to. In Pasuk Yudalid, it says, V'ovar olav ruach kina v'kine es ishto v'hi nitma. Only in Pasuk Yudalid do you see kina referred to. So how is it then, we go back to the beginning and ask, how is it that one witness is believed? Previously we thought, well, it's because the one witness is saying his testimony on the heels of an established suspicious basis, i.e. the husband warned her and then she went into seclusion. But we don't have that when you look at the order of the verses. The Gemara responds, Omar lay, Abaye answers Rav Papa, the Ovar, that word that you see at the beginning of Pasuk Yudalid, Ukvar Ovar. It's a past tense expression, meaning, and when it says in Pasuk Yudalid that the husband warned her, it means and the husband had warned her. The husband had warned her before going into seclusion, and then the singular witness testifies. So, of course, if you learn the psukim in that fashion, in that was a grammatical framework, the husband had warned her prior to the seclusion. So then, when the one witness comes to the fore, he really is coming on the heels of already suspicious circumstances. The Gemara asks, well, if we're going to accept Abaye's answer, well, what about the following pasuk? And now Abaye's answer was that the word vavar means ukvar avar. In terms of grammar, I might be mistaken, but I believe it would be the form of speech we call the past perfect grammatical form. If I'm not accurate on that, so I hope our listeners will forgive me, but if that's the case, that the avar is that that form of it already had been, well, the avar lochem kol chalutz hachinami. Now this pasuk is a reference to Moshe Rabbeinu commanding the tribes in the desert before crossing into the land of Canaan, which becomes Eretz Yisrael, warning the tribes or obligating the tribes of Gad and Reuven to follow into the land of Canaan, even though they had expressed their interest in remaining on the eastern bank of the Jordan River. So Moshe Rabbeinu is commanding them that you will go into the land of Canaan to fight for its conquest alongside or under the leadership of Yahushua. Now, do you see the word va'avar? Well, hachinami, is that also to mean that it had taken place? It can't be that it just can't be. So the Gemara says that's right, it can't be, but that's because the pasuk itself indicates it could not be. Hasam midichti v'nich b'shaharetz lefnei Hashem v'achar toshuvu, since in the same framework the pasuk says and the land will be conquered and then you will go back to where you want to be, mashma d'lahaba. There, the va'avar lochem kocholutz has a future connotation. Elahacha, but here in the case of the Soto woman, the married woman suspected of immorality, that you would leave the psukim in their current order and that would dictate the actual order of events, namely seclusion and the testimony that she became defiled, and then the husband warns. That doesn't make sense. Basar tumo stira, after the defilement and having been in seclusion, kinui lomali, what would the role of a warning be? So obviously the warning spoken about in pasuk yudalid means it had taken place. So that the one witness, when he comes to testify, is in fact with a previously established basis of suspicion. And that's why we believe him. Tono debei Rabbi Yishmael. Ein odom mekanel ishto kenichnasa bo ruach. A man does not warn his wife unless a spirit entered him. Now what the nature of this spirit is, the Gemara will present two opinions, but a spirit must have entered him. Shenemar v'over olov ruach kino v'kinei es ishto. A spirit entered him, and then he warned his wife. Now we're going to be discussing, let's say, this topic of spirit, recognizing that it's a somewhat, let's say, esoteric or abstract idea, but nevertheless, maybe in common terms, people are at times overcome with a sudden feeling without any previous basis for the emotional reaction to whatever. That would be possibly a manifestation of a spirit entering a person. All of a sudden, a person has a drive to do something without, as we say, without being predicated on some kind of previous event. So the Gemara here asks, "My ruach, what is this spirit?" Rabbonon Amri, ruach tuma. Rabbonon Rashi says, Rabbonon debei Ravashi, the students of the yeshiva of Ravashi, they said it's a spirit of of defilement. Again, this is quite esoteric, but it has to do with a spirit that's coming from a no good place. And Ravashi Omar Ruach Tahara. No, it's a spirit of purity, namely that the spirit that has disdain, has hate for lewdness, for priestess, as it's referred to in Hebrew. Umistabra kemandoma ruach tahara. And it's most likely that the spirit spoken of here is a spirit coming from a good place, from a place of purity. Shedisanya. And here we have a Tanaic source in which two Tanaic opinions will appear, but at the end of the day, we'll have to conclude that it's a ruach tahara, and you'll see why as the Gemara unfolds. The pasuk says, "V'kine es ishto." That is in pasuk Yudalid, where it said, "V'ovar olav ruach kino v'kine es ishto." Now the words "v'kine es ishto" equals Rashus, Divrei Rabbi Shmuel, means that when you read the words and the husband will warn his wife. Of course, we've seen in the past the word vikine could mean an expression of anger, but for our purposes, if we translate it, he becomes suspicious and hence warns his wife. Rabbi Shmuel says Rishus means a husband has an option to do thusly. He has an option to put his wife on notice. And Rabbi Kiva Omer Chova. Rabbi Kiva says a husband is obligated to serve notice that to his wife that she should not be in private with so and so that the husband suspects. E amris bishlomo ruach taro shapir. If you say that the ruach referred to in the pasuk is like Rav Ashi said, a spirit of purity, then this shapir means then this machlokus makes sense. It makes sense that once we establish you're dealing with a ruach taro, Rabbi Shmuel says, well, you have an option to exercise what the spirit is motivating you to do, and Rabbi Akiva says you're obligated to follow that spirit of purity, Ela Yamris Ruach Tuma. But if you're saying it's a spirit that comes from a no good place, from a source of defilement, then Rishus V'Chiva Yuli Linish Ruach Tuma Benafshe. Would you debate this as being either an option or an obligation to allow a spirit of tuma, of defilement, to enter oneself? So the Gemara concludes then, like Rav Ashi, that the pasuk, which made reference to a spirit entering the man, the husband, it's a spirit that comes from a place of purity, the spirit that has no tolerance for lewdness. Gufa. And how we quote that which we just saw three lines above in the Tanaic source in a more complete fashion. There are three points mentioned in the source. You can see that we've numbered them. On the side of the Gemara, we have a Nosei topic heading, which reads as follows. Machlokes Rabbi Shmuel v'Rabbi Kiva, a controversy between these two Tanoim. Im Rishus Ochova, regarding, that is, Begimel Mitzvahs, Im Rishus Ochova, regarding three mitzvahs, are they understood as an option one has or an obligation? And they are, number one, v'kine es ishto, we already referred to that. Number two, lo yitamo, this has to do with a common kohen defiling himself to one of the near relatives, like a mother, a sister, an unmarried sister who died. Does he, the Kohen, defile himself to participate in their funeral and whatever is related to the defilement issue that in general Kohanim are prohibited from? And number three, the Olam Bohem Tavodu, has to do with the topic of enslaving heathens, binding them into slavery, that once you, let us say, acquire a heathen slave, you are la'olam b'em tavodu, you are to forever enslave them. In other words, there's no, do not release them from bondage. Now, we go to the Gemara. Gufa. V'kine es ishto reshus divrei Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Kiva, Omer, Chova. We discussed that already. Number two, law yitama. The issue of the Kohen defiling himself to a near relative. Well, one opinion, reshus, that's divrei Rabbi Shmuel, that it's an option that a Kohen has. He's not obligated to, but if he wants to, even though in general a Kohen is prohibited from defiling himself to a corpse from the general public, he's not prohibited when it comes to a near relative. The opinion of Rabbi Shmuel, though, is that he's not obligated to. Rabbi Kiva Omer Chova, Rabbi Kiva goes a step further and says it's obligatory upon a Kohen to defile himself to one of the seven near relatives. Number three, Le'olam Bohem Tavodu, the issue of keeping a heathen slave in bondage permanently. Reshus Divrei Rabbi Yishmael, Rabbi Kiva Omer Chova. According to Rabbi Akiva, then, it would be prohibited to free a heathen slave from his bondage. Amar Le, Rav Papa Labaye V'Yamri Law, another version of names, Rav Mishar Shiel L'Rava. Lema, Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Kiva, B'chol HaTorah, Kula, Hachi, Pligi. Demor Omar Reshus, Umor Omar Choiva. Should one think that with regard to all positive mitzvos in the Torah, this machlokes applies, that Rabbi Shmuel says you have an option and Rabbi Kiva says you have an obligation? And if you say that, then it's going to come out that you don't have any mitzvah saseh, according to Rabbi Shmuel, you won't have any positive commands that are truly obligatory. And that's, of course, not true. So Omar Le, Abaye says, Hocho b'kroi pligi. Here, regarding these three topics, these three mitzvahs, there are psukim that serve as the basis of this machlokas. So that only in these three areas will you find this debate. You're not going to find this debate regarding the mitzvah of tefillin, or the mitzvah of mezuzah, or the mitzvah of lulav and esrog. But in these three areas, there is a scriptural basis for their machlokas. Now, as we go on in the Gemara, you'll notice a numbering scheme that's used on the side under our Mivneh heading. We have numbers in diamonds, 1 through 3, and we note Pirut Shalosh HaMitzvus Shebohem Cholku Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Kiva VeHezber Machlukusam. Here we'll itemize these three so that if you take an overview or a bird's eye view of the Gemara, you'll notice this discussion continues till the upper part of Omid Beis, where you'll see number 3 and a discussion, as we say, that follows. So now, number 1. V'kineas ishto, reshus. Divrei, Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Kiva, Omer, Chova. My time all to Rabbi Shmuel. Here, regarding the topic of the husband warning his wife, we ask now, what is the reason for Rabbi Shmuel that classifies it as an option? Answer, Sovar law, ki hai tana. Well, he holds like the teaching in the following Tanaic source. Tesanya, Rabbi Yehuda ben Yankiv Oimer, Klapi Shomro Torah, once the Torah teaches, Lo Sisna es Ochicho Bilvovecha, that it is prohibited for a person to bring himself to a feeling of hate and disdain and strife with his fellow Jew. Yachol Kegoim Zu, is it possible like this too, where a man sees his wife violating Jewish practice and he should remain silent? When we say violating Jewish practice, the Jewish practice involves women being loose, being too overly friendly with men other than their husbands. And a man sees this kind of behavior on her part, should he see it and remain silent? Talmud Lomar V'yovar Olav Ruach Kino V'kinei Es Ishto. The pasuk that we've cited already, namely V'kinei Es Ishto, that a husband has a right to put her on notice to warn her, and he is not considered in violation of lo sisno esochicha bilvovecha. So from this we see that a man has an option, even though he's engaging in a type of behavior that could result in strife between husband and wife, or between the woman and neighbors, as we saw on our Daf Beis Shiur. For Rabbi Kiva says it's not just an option, but it's obligatory. Kinui achrino ksiv. In the Pasuk you find the word kinui referenced to a second time. And the fact that kinui is repeated, one tells me there's an option, and the second one hammers the point home to say it's not just an option, but it's actually an obligation. Now, if you look in the Pasuk itself, you might notice this duplication. Pasuk Yudalet of Bamidbar, hey, we have it on the side. We made reference to this Pasuk earlier, and it says, V'yover alav ruach kinah v'kineyes ishto v'hinitma. You notice the word v'kineh, that's the first time you see it. V'yover alav ruach kinah v'kineyes ishto v'hilonitma. And again, you see v'kineh, and in this time in the context of and her not having been defiled. So that the Pasuk uses the word v'kineh twice, and Rabbi Kiva sees that as an emphasis to make the point that it is obligatory. For Rabbi Yishmael, well, what's his response to this? He says the duplication of v'kineh is not a revelation of a new point of law, namely to make it obligatory, but Aidi deboy l'michta v'hi nitma v'hi lo nitma, since the Pasuk needs to teach us the two situations of either her being defiled or not having been defiled. Ksiv nami v'kinei es ishto. The Pasuk repeats the expression v'kinei es ishto, even though its repetition is not necessary, but the Pasuk will do it anyway. L'chidetona debei Rabbi Shmuel. As is taught in the Yeshiva of Rabbi Shmuel, the Tona Rabbi Shmuel, kol parsha shenemar v'nishneis, sections of the Torah that are stated and repeated, lo nishneis elo b'shvil dover shenishadish bo, the repetition is because of you'll find an entire section repeated, even though the repetition was necessary only for one point. Nevertheless, in repeating the section for that one novel point, other information will be repeated along with it that really is not revealing anything new. Maybe to appreciate this a little more, we look at the Rashi a few lines up from here. Rabbi Shmuel, Omar Loch, Aidi Deboy Lemichtav, Vihi Nitma, Vihi Lo Nitma. Since the Pasuk had to teach us the two possibilities, the woman either becoming defiled in an actual act of intimacy or not, Shesofek Hubiodeno, the Pasuk reflects the element of doubt. Either she was or was not defiled. V'afapikain osro hakosuv misafek, and nevertheless she is prohibited to her husband. Even though we're dealing with a situation of mere doubt whether she was actually defiled by the paramour, but the situation of doubt is sufficient for prohibiting her to remain with her husband until, of course, she drinks the water in the Beis Hamikdash. And that's a novel point. Kosav nami v'kine achrino, the Pasuk writes again v'kine es ishto. V'afagav de motzi l'michtav hochi, even though the Pasuk could have used a shortened version, namely v'avaro lov ruach kino v'kine es ishto v'hi nitma oi lo nitma o. That would be a shortened version of the Pasuk where you see the two possibilities of nitma or lo nitma, which would create the spirit of doubt. It's characteristic of psukim to repeat in full that which was already said, because of some other point that is revealed in the repetition. And we pointed out the novel point is the fact that even though we have a mere doubt, she, the woman, the wife, becomes prohibited to her husband. So the rest of the information was repeated, namely, we're including the kinei es ishto, but it's not revealing of some new point, namely that it's an obligation for the husband to warn her. Number two, lo itamo rishus divrei Rabbi Shmuel. Rabbi Kiva omer choyva, the topic regarding the defilement of a kohen to a near relative, is it an option that he has, or is it obligatory? Well, my time with Rabbi Shmuel. Rabbi Shmuel, who said that it's an option, what is his basis? Well, I need to receive a moral kohenim b'nei Aaron v'yomar to lehem l'nefesh lo yitamo b'yamov. Since the Torah warns the kohanim not to defile themselves to the dead, it's the richol mikhtav lo yitamo. In order to counter the general prohibition, the Torah had to say that he has an option, he has permission to defile himself to a near relative, like a father, a mother, a brother, an unmarried sister, a son, a daughter. Rabbi Kiva says, Miki im l'she'eroi nafga. The idea of a kohen having a right to defile himself to a near relative, that is learned from the pasuk that says ki im l'she'ero, which for our purposes is license for a kohen to defile himself. Lo yitamo lo moli, the pasuk of lo yitamo, what is its purpose? L'chova. In addition to having the option, he even has an obligation. For Rabbi Shmuel said that it is an option only and not an obligation to defile. Lo mitamo v'ein mitamo levoreha. So stylistically, it would seem that Rabbi Shmuel accepts Rabbi Kiva's source for the option, namely ki im l'she'ero. Well, then, if that's the case, what does Rabbi Shmuel do with the pasuk lo yitamo? He doesn't learn anymore from that, the idea of option, that he would learn from ki'im l'she'ero. So what does Rabbi Shmuel do with lo yitamo? He says that a kohen is allowed to defile himself to the dead relative when they are complete, but not to one of their limbs. If there is an isolated limb, you have a case of, for example, an amputation, where a limb is removed from a relative, so that even though had that relative died, the kohen has the option to defile himself, he is prohibited from exposing himself to the defilement of an aver min hachai, of a limb removed from a living relative. Just like a limb that would be separated from that relative if they were dead. But the idea being a defilement to a limb, even though it's from a relative, that is prohibited. We continue at the top of Omid Beis, Rabbi Akiva. Well, what does Rabbi Akiva say about this point? Im Kain, meaning if the pasuk was simply for the purpose of excluding limbs and not to teach, like I say, an obligation, then lichtoiv rachmona lo v'lishtok. It would have been enough for the pasuk to write a law, and not add the word itamo. So itamo lomali. Why does the pasuk add the word itamo? Shmamino. This shows us that it is an obligation. So you have a repeated word for the purpose of strengthening the idea of defilement to raise it to the level of obligation. Response of Rabbi Shmuel to that follows Rabbi Shmuel. Aidi de Kosav law, since the Torah writes the word law, and the word law is necessary for excluding limbs, so Kosav nami itamo, it adds the word itamo as well, but there's no new point of law revealed from its repetition, L'chidetona debay Rabbi Shmuel, based on Rabbi Shmuel's principle that we discussed back on Omid Aleph. The same point is mentioned here, Detona debay Rabbi Shmuel. Kol parsha shenamra v'nishneis, sections of the Torah that are that appear as seeming repetition, lo nishneis elo b'shil dover shenishadish ba. The repetition is for one point, but once we justify the repetition for one point, other words may be repeated even though there is no real new revelation. Let us look at a Rashi that applies to the top line of the Gemara, where Rabbi Kiva said, where does he see obligation and not just exclusion of limbs? So the Gemara said he saw that from the word itama that was added. Rashi on the top, Lichtov Rachmona lo v'lishtok, demashma lenefesh lo itamo b'amov kiim l'sheiro, ulachoso habsula lo, klomar legufa. Had the pasuk stopped with the word law, I would understand legufa sholem v'lo levorel, that the permission to defile himself that is derived from the expression kiim l'sheiro, that applies when she is law, meaning herself, when she's complete, not when we're dealing with limbs. So as far as Rabbi Akiva was concerned, why was the word yitamo added? Even though we saw the idea of defilement from the first part of the pasuk where it said nefesh lo yitamo be'amov ki'im l'sheiro. So we saw that when it comes to a relative, yitamo is an option. Why was the word yitamo added? So Rabbi Akiva said, for emphasis purposes, to raise it to the level of obligation. Rabbi Shmuel, consistent to the Tana de Rabbi Shmuel, says there is really no revelation in the second appearance of the word itamo. We go to the third point that they debated, the Oilam Bohem Tavodu, Rishus de Rabbi Shmuel, regarding the freeing, the release from bondage of a heathen slave. Rabbi Shmuel says that the Torah that says you shall enslave them forever is stating a matter of option. Rabbi Kiva Omer Chovo, you are obligated to maintain their servitude and not release them. My taimo de Rabbi Shmuel. Where does Rabbi Shmuel see this idea of it is an option that one has to maintain the servitude? Dichtiv. Now, the pasuk that we're reading is a pasuk dealing with the topic of the conquest, say the conquest of the land of Israel at the time of Yehoshua crossing over and then spending 14 years conquering the land. It says, Lo sichaya kol neshama, that you shall not maintain alive any of the inhabitants. So since the pasuk says that the, sometimes referred to as the seven nations that inhabited the land of Israel, it's referred to in the Torah as Eretz Canaan, the Torah says you shall not keep any alive. So it's Itzrichnami Lemichtav, the pasuk also wrote, Le'olam Bohem Tavodu, Lemishri echod mikol umois shebo al haknainis vehoilid mimeno ben shatarosh rashoy liknoso. If, let us say, a man from Japan had intimacy with a woman from the seven nations and a child was born, so the Torah allows a Jew to acquire that child whose father is from a foreign land, even though the mother is from the Canaanite people, one of the seven nations of the land of Israel. Hence, the Torah says, "Le'olam em tavodu," you are allowed to have him enslaved. Again, it's a matter of option. You can keep him enslaved. In other words, contrary to the way you deal with the general local population, the seven nations, they are to be eliminated. Not so in the case of a foreign man that has a child with a Canaanite woman. Desanya. And here we have a Tanaic source that gives us more information on this topic of those children born from, we'll refer to them as mixed marriages, either the man from the Canaanite people, a woman from outside, or the other way around. And we'll find that there's actually a different standard for each case. The Gemara here makes reference to Psukim, and Rashi also elaborates. Before we go further in the Gemara, let's take a look at the Psukim that will be the feature of the text. We've included the Psukim on the side. Vayikra Perek Chafei, first Pasuk Mem Hei, then Pasuk Mem Vav. It says in Pasuk Mem Hei, V'gam Ibnei HaToshavim HaGorim Imochem Mehem Tiknu Umi Mishpachtom Asher Imochem Asher Holidu Ba'artzachem V'hoyu Lochem La'achuza. Reference is made to those that are born in your land, in the land of Israel, and you will keep them as property. And Pasuk Mem Vav says, V'isnachaltem Oysom Livnechem Acharechem These slaves that Pasuk Mem Hei referred to are considered your property, and as such are passed from one generation to the next. Upon the death of the owner, so the son will inherit these slaves. Uvachechem b'nei Yisrael ish b'achiv lo sirada boi b'forach. However, when it comes to Jew with fellow Jew, the Torah says not to enslave him in the same fashion that one would enslave a heathen slave. We turn back to the Gemara. Number 3. Lo'olomem tavodu rishus. And we saw this in our source. We're just reviewing the Machlokes. And Rabbi Shmuel said, and Rabbi Kiva says, choiva. So now we're referring to the Tanaic source, where we see additional information. So we're picking up with the source Desanya Minayin Leecho Min Ha'umois Sheboala Knainis Vahoylid Mimeno Ben Shata Rashoy Liknosu Bevet. From where do we know that a male from a foreign country that has intimacy and leads to the birth of a child, and his intimacy is with a Canaanite woman, that you are allowed to buy that individual as a slave? Talmud Lomar v'gam mibnei ha'toshavim ha'gorim imochem mehem tiknu. So from the language of this pasuk, we derive, and Rashi gives more background to it. We don't have to get into it right now. Suffice it to say that from the language of this pasuk, we understand we're talking about a man from a foreign country who had relations with a Canaanite woman, and they moved to the land of Israel. You can buy that offspring as a slave. And it doesn't come under the requirement mentioned before, lo sechaya kol neshama. Yochel av haknaini sheboal achas min ha'umois v'hoylid mimeno ben shata rashoy liknoso be'evet. Could it be that a male Canaanite that had relations with a woman from a foreign country and they produced a child, would you be allowed to buy him? Talmud Lomar, the pasuk says, asher holidu ba'artzechem min hanoloded ba'artzechem v'lo min hagorim ba'artzechem. Only those that were noloded ba'artzechem. And again, without getting into the etymology or the exact connotation of these words, suffice it to say that those that are noloded ba'artzechem, men that came from abroad and came from outside Israel and bore children in your land, those you can buy, but not v'lo min ha'gorim ba'artzechem, not from the males that live in the land, indigenous males that bore children, even though it's with a woman from a foreign country. Those you're not allowed to buy. Those come under the heading, or come under the commandment of lo sechaya kol neshama. Those have to be eliminated. So from this, Rabbi Shmuel understands that La'oilom b'em tavodu is simply a reference to an option that one has to buy them and have them as slaves. Where does Rabbi Akiva see that one is obligated to maintain their bondage and not release them? For Rabbi Akiva, mehem mi mehem tiknu nafka. From the expression mehem tiknu that you see in the pasuk, we learn the idea of option to buy them. La'olam bem tavodu lomali. Why, after you write that you have the option to buy them, does the Torah say, and you shall keep them in bondage forever? L'choiva, to teach me that it's an obligation to maintain their bondage and not release them. For Rabbi Yishmael, bohem, the word bohem that Rabbi Akiva saw as pointing to obligation, Rabbi Yishmael uses it for something else. V'lo be'acheichem. That the, let's say, the concept of bondage and servitude applies to them and not to fellow Jews. Rabbi Akiva, be'acheichem yisefa dekro nafka. The limitation as far as how far can you enslave a fellow Jew, that is learned from the end of the pasuk. Uva'acheichem b'nei Yisrael yishbachiv lo sirde boi beforech. And at the end of Pasuk Men Vov, we see the exclusion of fellow Jews from total servitude and bondage. So I don't need bohem for that as a limitation expression. And hence Rabbi Akiva sees from the word lohem, that is bohem in the Pasuk of Le'olam Bohem Tavodu, the obligation to maintain their servitude. V'Rabbi Yishmael, since the Torah writes the Achechem Israel, so Ksiv Nami Bohem, the word Bohem was in fact repeated. So that you see that Rabbi Shmuel accepts Rabbi Akiva's point that Achechem Ben Israel Ishbach Losubforch is the basis of excluding fellow Jews from total servitude and bondage. So what does the word bohem do now, according to Rabbi Shmuel? He tells you really doesn't reveal anything. It's there based on the principle. Here we're seeing it for the third time. L'chidisanyo, l'chiditoni, debay Rabbi Shmuel. The tonne de Rabbi Shmuel, kol parsha shenem of anishneis, lo nishneis elo b'shvil, dover shenis chadesh bo. Sections of the Torah that are taught a second time are taught for one point of newness of revelation, and along with that, other words may be included, even though they do not represent a point of revelation. And that's the case, as far as Rabbi Shmuel is concerned, with the expression bohem in the pasuk Le'olam bohem tavodu. As we go on in the Gemara, triangles appear, and on the side, under our Nosei Mivneh heading, we indicate these are Meimros Rav Chisda, comments made by Rav Chisda, Begnus, in criticism, Begnus Kas Uznus, criticizing the characteristics of wrath and promiscuity, Vashba'osim al Beisus Shel Odom, and the effects that wrath and lewdness have on a person's household. The Gemara. Omar Rev Chisda. Znusa Beveisa Kikarya Lushum Shema. Lewdness, promiscuity in one's household is like a karya, is a type of vegetation. Imagine a pumpkin. And a shumshima is a worm. It's, what's the point here? It, lewdness in a household, leads to its being, to the household rotting away, being consumed gradually, slowly by slowly, just like a worm, eating away at the, inside of a karya, this type of vegetation. The Gemara continues. V'yomer Rav Chisda tukfa beveso ki karya l'shum shema. A second characteristic that also eats away, destroys a house, is the element of wrath. And now a very interesting revelation, Edi ve'Edi ve'Itza. Both of these ideas, or the idea of a house rotting away by virtue of wrath and promiscuity, this is true when it's the nature, the characteristics of the Itza, the woman, the wife of the household, the mother of the household. Aval begavra leslon ba. When it comes to the man, it's not the same. Leslon ba literally means we don't mind it. But for our purposes, it's not the same thing. Now, as this recording is being made, without giving the actual date of it, but suffice it to say, as this recording is being made, I don't know what things are going to be like, you know, many years down the road when someone might still be listening to this recording. But suffice it to say, the society that is currently, the standard bearer, might find this difficult to absorb. This distinction made, but Chazal are everlasting. What they say has eternal value. Current societies come and go, and here is a fundamental statement that this idea of a household rotting away because of, let's say, the father's wrathfulness, where, by the way, we're not advocating either one of these characters as lewdness or wrathfulness. They're both sinful behaviors. But the question is, what kind of effect does that have on a household? This is an issue that goes beyond the issue of sinfulness and the disdain that we have toward these characteristics. We're here focusing on the issue of what effect does it have on a household. So there's a worse effect that these characteristics have when it's manifested by the wife or by the woman, the mother of the household, not so much by the father. The Gemara continues, V'yomar Rav Chisda b'tchilo kirim shechotu Yisrael. At the beginning, before the Jews sinned in the area of forbidden intimacies, Rashi speaks about Arayas. Arayas is forbidden relatives. In the beginning, before the Jews descended into these prohibited relations, the divine presence rested upon each household. Shenema ki Hashem Elokecha mishalech bekerev machanecha. The Almighty God walks in the midst of your camp. Kevan shechotu, when they sinned, nistalka shechina mehem, the divine presence left. Shenemar v'lo yira b'chayar v'zdovar v'shov me'acharecha. The Almighty does not want to see erva's dover promiscuity in your midst, because if he does, v'shov me'acharecha, he will depart. Omar Rav Shmuel bar Nachmeni, Omer of Unison. On the side of the Gemara, before we continue, we have a topic heading, Mitzvoiso v'chatov shel Odom melaven oisoi li'olam haba. The merits, the commandments fulfilled by a person, and to the contrary, the sins of a person, they both accompany him to the world to come. So, Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachmeni, quoting Rabbi Unison, says, Kol eisa mitzvah achas b'olam hazeh, a person who performs even a singular mitzvah in this world, we can say each mitzvah that a person accomplishes in this world, walks in ahead of him. Mekadmoso, Rashi says, Mekadmoso lifnei misoso machrezes lefonov. Even before the individual dies, the mitzvah announces that so and so who is about to die performed this and this mitzvah. So it walks, the mitzvah introduces him, announces his arrival before the person himself actually reaches the world to come. Shenemar, the pasuk says, V'holach lefonecho tzidkecha, your acts of righteousness walk in front of you. V'chol ha'oivra averoch achaz b'lamazeh, people who sin in this world. So the relationship there between the sin and the sinner is as follows. Melafosai v'ilechas lefanav liyom adin. Melafosai means it cloaks him, it surrounds him. Rashi says koirachto. Koirachto is to surround him, embraces him, if you will, and goes with him to the world to come. There's a, you'll notice that in the case of the act of righteousness, of mitzvah fulfillment, you see the word mekadmosoi, that it acts as a harbinger announcing his arrival. In the case of the sin, it's true that you see the word hoileches lefana, but you don't see mekadmoso. So it's a seeming different approach between the two. The it could be, as I'm speaking right now, it occurs to me that assuming that in the case of the act of righteousness, you see the word mekadmosa, it means before his death, the mitzvah announces his arrival. When it comes to a sin, there's no point in referring to the sin before his death, because there is always the possibility, up till the actual moment of death, the possibility of tshuva, of penitence and regret of having done the sin. And hence, if that takes place, it would then have a very positive effect, and there would be no point in having the sin, which is then going to be, let's say, erased by the penitence announcing the person's arrival before he actually dies. So when it comes to an act of mitzvah fulfillment, of tzedek, of righteousness, so that acts as a harbinger before the person actually dies. When it comes to a sin, that it would be pointless because of, as we said, the possibility of atonement prior to actual death. The Gemara continues. We said that the sin cloaks, wraps around the person and goes with the person, not ahead of the person, but with him to the world to come. And it says, let's go over the point, point that we call in Beis. V'chol u'iva avira achas v'olamazem lafosu v'olechas lefonov liyom hadin. It grabs and cloaks him, wraps around him, and walks with him to the day of judgment. Shenemar yilofsu or chois darkom yalu bato v'yovedu. The word yilofsu, like the word melafafoso, to wrap around him. Rabbi Lezer Omer kshurabo kekelev. We have a second description of the sin, and is that it's tied to him, like it's tied to the sinner, like a dog. Shenemar v'lo shoma alel lishkav etzlo liyos imo. This pasuk is from Yosef and the wife of Potiphar, where she tried to lead him to sin with her, and he did not heed her her advances. There's in this pasuk you see a duplicate or a double expression, lishkav and liyos. So we darshan lishkav etzlo b'olamazeh. Yosef did not yield to her advances to lie with her in this world. Liyosima le'olam haba, to be with her, namely the sin, to accompany him to the world to come. Tanan hasam. Before we go further in the Gemara, we glance at the topic heading on the side, the Nosei, which reads, Mekoros be'inin eid echod betuma, sources regarding a singular witness that testifies about the sota and an actual act of intimacy. Number one, acharei kinoi ustira, the issue of the singular witness testimony after she was warned and went into seclusion. And a case of a singular witness coming forth and saying he saw an act of intimacy, however, b'li kinui ustira, without prior evidence of her being warned and having gone into seclusion. So the issue, once again, revolves around the acceptance under what circumstances do we believe a singular witness who says he saw the actual act of intimacy. And all of this is on the, in the, without stating it, it's on the background of the fact that in general, in order to establish facts, you need to have two witnesses. So now our Gemara, which is, we can actually read the Rashi for introductory purposes, just a few lines up here in Rashi, Tanan Hasa Beperek Mishakine, and later in this Masechta, in Perek Mishakine, this Tanaic source appears. My dekotoni omar eidechad risio shenitma lo haisa shoisa. Regarding that which we were taught, that if a singular witness saw the act of intimacy, that she does not continue with the sota process, which involves her drinking special waters in the base hamikdash. That idea of drinking the waters in the base hamikdash is reserved for the situation of a woman who received a warning and went into seclusion. We don't know what happened in seclusion. But if a singular witness comes to the fore and says, I saw the act of intimacy, so given certain circumstances, we say no, we stop the process and no drinking will follow. So now, with that background, we read in our Gemara, Tnan Hosam, Shehoya Bedin. That means logic would have led us to the conclusion that one witness is not believed. If not for the fact that a pasuk comes to tell us that he is, we would have said a singular witness is not believed. And what's the logic? Uma Edus Harishoina. Now, this expression, Edus Harishona, is a reference to testimony concerning her going into seclusion. There is a source that we're probably not going to deal with today, but you'll see the second line from the bottom. It says, Tonu Rabbonon, Ezu hi Edus Harishona. Reference was made to this idea of first testimony. What is that? Zu Edus Stira. That's a reference to testimony concerning her, the married woman's, going into seclusion with another man. The Gemara continues there at the last line and says, Edus Achrona, that expression, Zu Edus Tuma, that is a reference to testimony concerning actual act of intimacy. So you can see that the terms, Edus Rishon, Edus Achrona, which at this point we're holding in the Gemara, appear to be obscure, they're explained in the source at the bottom. So now, that having been said, we go back to our Gemara, where we left off. Uma'edus HaRishona, which we now know means testimony concerning her being in seclusion. She'ein Osarta Isur Olam. That testimony does not result in the woman being prohibited permanently to be with, to go back to her husband. Namely, if she if there was testimony that she had been warned and went into seclusion, she can end up drinking the water in the Beis HaMikdash. Nothing happens to her. She is then found to be innocent. She goes back to her husband. So, Edus Rishona, that's the testimony concerning Stira, concerning seclusion, that doesn't result in her being permanently prohibited. And yet, Eino Miskayemes Mepochos Mishnayim. Of course, we saw Machlokas Tanoi, we saw Tanaic controversy concerning this. We're going to follow one of the approaches that we've seen, namely that the Edus for Stira does not take place with less than two. We saw certainly Rabbi Yeshua in the Mishnah saying this idea that you have to have two witnesses for Edus of Stira. And even though Stira is not so serious, it doesn't represent a definite permanent prohibition. Edus Achrona shel Sadis Olam. Testimony concerning Tuma, concerning the actual act of intimacy after her being in seclusion, which would result in her being permanently prohibited to her husband, a married woman who willingly has relations with another man, she is prohibited to go back to living with her husband. Eino din shelo tiskayim b'pochus mishnayim. All the more so, we should require no less than two witnesses. Talmud Lomar V'Eid Ein Ba. So the Torah says there, Eid Ein Ba means Kol Shiyesh Ba. For our purposes, means any kind of testimony that is there, even one, will be believed. And we've seen on Daf Beis where we dashed in V'Eid Ein Ba, and we said two there weren't, but one there was. And we believe them. We believe him, the singular witness. So that because of this pasuk, the Eid Ein Ba, we operate contrary to logic and say that in the case of Eidus Tuma, one witness is believed. Even though that when it came to Eidus of Stira, which was a less serious matter, you needed to have two. Well, once we've established this, then V'kal v'chomer le'Eidus HaRishona me'ata. Well, now that you tell me that for the serious matter of Eidus Tuma, one witness is enough, for the Eidus Rishona, which we said was the Eidus of Stira, of merely going into seclusion, one certainly should be enough. As follows, Uma Eidus Achrona shows Satis to Oilam, Miskayemis Be'ed Echod, mind you, Eidus Achrona, Eidus, the testimony of defilement, which prohibits her permanently to go back to her husband. One witness is sufficient. Eidus HaRishona Sheino Sarti Soilo Meido Din Shediskayim Be'ed Echad. The Eidus HaRishona, which is testimony concerning mere seclusion, which doesn't necessarily result in permanent prohibition. Certainly one witness should be enough. Talmud Lomar Ki Motza Bo Ervas Davar. Regarding promiscuity, it's not in the Parsha of Sota, but nevertheless, it deals with Ervas Dover promiscuity. You see this expression, Ki Motzab Ervas Dover, emphasis on the word Dover, Ulahalon Huaymer Al Pishnai Eidim O Al Pishloisha Eidim Yokum Dover. Ma Dover Hom Ulahalon Al Pishnayim Eidim. Just like the Pasuk in Dvarim Perek Yotes says you need to have two witnesses, Av Kan, so too when it comes to Dvar Erva, Alpi Shnayim. You need to have two witnesses. There's a bracketed session that we'll skip initially, and it says, V'tumah bi'alma b'lo kinu y'b'lo stira d'lo me'man echad min olon. When it comes to tumah in general, that, namely, promiscuity, without a prior warning and prior seclusion, that one witness is not believed. Where do we learn that from? So, Ne'emar Kan, and there the Gzera Shava will appear again. And the reason for that is what is revealed in the bracketed section. On the side, we have a note, a starred note, and it says, B'socha Sograim HaGemara Makshe Al Shimush B'Gzera Shava K'moker L'Shnei Eidim L'Eidus Astira. The Gemara will ask on what we have just done before the brackets, as citing a source for the need for two witnesses for Eidus concerning seclusion. After the brackets, the Gemara then brings the real use of the Gzera Shava. So what we saw just now is not the final use of the Gzera Shava. That will be revealed after the brackets. So now let's go through the bracketed section. The Gemara asks, "Hi, that you need two witnesses for stira miki motzva ervas dovar nafka? Is it learned from the dovar gezera shava mi ba nafka ba v'lo bikinui ba v'lo b'stira mi boyale?" We had the pasuk V'Eid Ein Ba. This, of course, we saw cited earlier in this source, and we spent a lot of time on this drasha on our Daf Beis shiur, our previous shiur. So from the pasuk of V'Eid Ein Ba, there isn't any, you don't have two witnesses for Ba, for Tum'ah, for the actual defilement. There, one witness is enough. But one witness is not enough for kinui nor for stira. For kinui and stira, you need to have two witnesses. So how is it that you're saying that for stira I need two witnesses from the gzera shav of dovar when I learned that from the limitation expression of ba? The Gemara says, "Hachi nami ka'omar." You know, we acknowledge what you just said. Talmud lomar ba ba v'lo b'kinoi ba v'lo b'stira. In other words, if you're looking for a source on as far as edus edus ho'achrona, alone one witness is sufficient, but for stira one witness is not sufficient. That I learned from the ba limitation expression. So now, what am I going to do with the dover dover gzereshava? The tuma be alma below kinuy below stira delo mehem on eda chod minolon. And tuma in general, if you have a married woman being involved in an act of sexual intimacy with another man other than her husband, without the prior conditions of kinuy and stira, and only one witness testifies of having seen that, that we do not believe him. We don't accept the testimony of a singular witness. How do I know that? Tam nemar kan ki moso bo ervas davar. The nemar lahalon al pi shnei edim osha pi shloish edim yokum davar. One pasuk dealing with promiscuity, ervas davar. The word dover appears, and elsewhere, when it comes to testimony, the pasuk refers to two or three witnesses. Ma dover amur la'alon edim shnayim, just like dover in the pasuk of lo of al pi shnei edim yokum dover, you need to have two. Af kan, with regard to arayas, promiscuity, forbidden relations, you need edim shnayim, two witnesses. And as we pointed out earlier and many times prior to this, when it comes to the promiscuity of a married woman coming on the heels of the husband warning her not to be in seclusion with so-and-so, and there's established testimony to that having taken place, then even a singular witness will believe with information regarding the actual act of intimacy between that married woman and the paramour. But without that prior testimony, you, in order to prohibit the woman from her husband and to prosecute her, well, you would have to have two witnesses. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.